And welcome to Pacifica Performance Showcase, Arts and Culture, to enlighten, enliven, and educate. I'm your host, Donna Walker, and it is my great pleasure to welcome via phone. We always wish you were in person, Ms. Ellen Gehr, but we're happy to have you by phone. Ellen Gehr, the life force behind Will Gehr's Theatricum Botanicum, which is in the midst of another incredible season right there in the heart of Topanga, under the stars, under the sun, whenever you choose to go. It's a whole life experience, I say. Tell us about this year's season. I've seen one of the shows thus far, and I'll be seeing them all as I always try to do. But it's kind of a special season.
Yeah, it's a season. I guess I call it a season on the edge. You know, we're in such a crazy time in our country, and so I thought, well, we might as well help people think through it. And so the first one we put on was Romeo and Juliet, Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, and everybody probably has seen the play or they want to introduce their kids to the play, but we put it in East Jerusalem. And in order to bring it to the next generations so that they really get what happens when adults, either their parent or their country or their religious beliefs or their societal beliefs of the older generation, in how it impacts on the younger generation and how it can give them values that maybe they don't need. You know, maybe they need to explore their own. And in this case, in Romeo and Juliet, it crushes their love.
And I presume we're dealing with a Palestinian and Jewish.
Yes, Israeli. And it isn't really to take sides. It's just to show what can happen, you know, to the next generation as feelings that cause contention are passed on generation after generation.
Well, you know, Ellen, I was just going to interject that I just had the pleasure of seeing the West Side Story at the Hollywood Bowl
due to Mel.
I have to tell you, it's always wonderful, and I knew it would be wonderful, but I was just blown away at, of course, the eternal relevance of this story.
Yeah, because it makes you think about, how am I suppressing my kids with my values, and I've not even let them create their own.
Exactly.
So that's why we did it, because we have so many young people that come out and see our plays, and we wanted to not do the usual classical version. We wanted them to kind of connect it to their world today.
But it's still the Shakespeare, though.
Oh, it's totally Shakespeare. Totally Shakespeare. I only changed things like the Friar Lawrence is now Mufti. You know,
yeah.
and the prince is a rabbi. You know, it works. It really does. And then the other place, of course, we have our Midsummer Night's Dream, which is the best way for young people to come learn about Shakespeare. And then we have it's an adaptation from Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Yes.
I've always loved that piece, and Uncle Tom got such a rap. Or a decisive thing about him not, you know, being strong enough in a time of horror, which was during slavery. And the writer Harriet Beecher Stowe, a woman writer who you weren't supposed to write when you were a woman back in that day in the 1850s, she did research, and she was a very religious woman, and she was finding herself questioning her religion, thou shalt not kill, and how you treat people equally within her religion, and yet it wasn't being done in the South. And so she wrote this series, and people just lommed onto it because they wanted to know. It's sort of like our learning curve today, and it just swarmed in on them. And I wanted to show Uncle Tom, when I read the book, that he's amazing what he did, how he's like Martin Luther King. Through his religion and his peaceful way, all he wanted to do was to live and to help through it and to survive, knowing he couldn't change it.
And, you know, you and I had a conversation. I went out to see this at the Theatricum, and I, too, had read the book when I was rather young, and, you know, sixth grade, seventh grade, something like that. And it always had such an impression upon me. And it really is unfortunate that basically Uncle Tom has been reduced to a catchphrase, as you say. And I know this particular piece is very dear to you. But I also think about, you know, somebody like President Obama, who, you know, they always get upset when they feel he isn't angry enough or reactionary enough. Instead of being calm, cool, and collected, probably the coolest cat on the block. And then we have somebody like Donald Trump, who's nothing but angry and reactionary and stirring that up in people. So it's really an interesting thing to revisit this particular piece. And this is a world premiere, is it not? You've adapted it from the novel?
Yeah, I adapted it from the novel because I've always felt how could, I mean, he loved his religion and passing on, because that's what kept him alive, and passing on even more than his family. You know, I sometimes felt that about Martin Luther King, too. Do you know that he needed to help heal something that wasn't right? And that's what the writer was doing, Harriet Beecher Stowe, also. And it became one of the most popular novels ever when she put it into novel form.
And she did help change the course of history. Lincoln referred to her as the little lady who made this great war.
Yeah, who started the Civil War.
Yeah.
That's right.
But it
That's right. And Frederick Douglass wrote to her because she wrote and asked him, you know, questions, and so it wasn't, in that day and age, something that was horrific. It opened the door for conversation. Whether you agree with Uncle Tom's values of religion and how to survive in a time you cannot get out of, how to keep his family safe. If he hadn't done what he had done, they would have taken his family away. And by himself going downriver, he could keep that from happening.
And I think it speaks to the impact that arts and culture can have. You know, I've always said it's the most subversive thing there is. And I think you probably agree with that, because Theatricum does this beautiful thing where they take the classics or they take these pieces and really place them in the relevance of today. And I think that's so valuable.
Yeah, that's what makes, I think, classics live, you know, and that not always, you don't always have to move it to a different time. You have to be very careful when you do it, but if it will help the society of the day and what's going on in the day, then there's no reason why you can't, and I think Shakespeare would just come out of his grave and love it.
I think so, too. And in addition to your extraordinary acting abilities, you know, if you had done nothing else in this lifetime other than be in Harold and Maude, you would be on my star list. But, of course, you write, you act, you also direct. And coming up this weekend, speaking of classics, is Titus Andronicus.
Titus Andronicus. It's coming up right after we've just opened Imaginary Invalid, which is, a good blast, Molière's blast on the medical world. And then this week we open up with Titus Andronicus, which is a rarely performed Shakespeare play. It's I had always looked a little askance at it, and now I look at it and I think of it as a government gone awry. Mm-hmm. And I thought this would be a perfect time to do it. It's almost that it's a time when people aren't listening, when our government isn't listening to our citizens. But they do listen to the media, you know, and the media rules, but they don't listen to what the citizens really need and want. And so that's what this story is about.
And also, you know, we think it's often, you know, sort of referred to as Shakespeare's bloodiest play. And it does take a lot of invention and experimentation, over the years. But, you know, we think of, oh, geez, you know, maybe it's over the top. Maybe there's just too many bodies left on the stage. And I venture to say, in times such as these, where each week we see the mounting of the body counts. It is frighteningly relevant.
Yeah. And guess what goes on with people's mind that they continue to do this? You know, that revenge, it's called revenge, you know.
Yes.
And revenge turns into murder and so many rapes now. And it's just a power game that kind of leaves the ordinary citizen loose. with no home, you know?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it is a heartbreaking time, and I do think it is important to sort of get out in this world, and that's the other thing I love about Topanga is you're in this beautiful setting in the heart of nature, and you can't help but feel that there's still hope left in this world when you have that kind of experience. You can take a picnic, you can go early, you have these special dinner nights. It's a chance to, you know, get there a little early and wander around the grounds and the great, wonderful garden. And
we have some wonderful concerts coming up, and Ara George will be coming up and celebrating, and then we have Bo Bridges is coming back to do his fascinating piece on Dalton Trumbo's Johnny Got His Gun.
Great.
And we have our, you know, our Off the Grid, our improvisational series, and our Under the Oaks, where we have some beautiful concerts coming up. It's all there on www.theatricum.com, and you can find out all the different things that are coming up, and our Halloween celebration, Bhutanicum. We're just very busy and very happy to serve.
Well, and one of the things you do every year is you have the great, Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger shows, and we're going to go out hopefully with a couple of little tracks from this tribute.
Yeah, one of my favorite, the Woody Show. It's just something that my dad started and that we've done with our family for years, and it's just so wonderful to always go back to the songs and sing them. And then, of course, after Pete died, I just think that's another person we should, you know, sing out with everybody every year.
Yeah, and they'll get a chance if they go out there to the Theatricum to actually see, from the outside anyway, that the Woody Shack where Woody Guthrie stayed. That's always such fun. And there's this, you know, there's this wonderful tribute album to Woody that your father, Papa Gear, does some narration on. So,
oh, that's right.
Yeah.
It's well, they were old buds.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got a wonderful picture of him and Pop skinny dipping with my mother.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, they were old buds.
Well, before I let you go, and we never have enough time, of course, but one of the other things that you do at the Theatricum is you do play with the idea of gender reversal in some of these roles. And you also, this year, an imaginary invalid, are playing what is normally done as a male role. You do a lot of that, and that's really great. It sheds a new light on some of these pieces.
I think it does. I really does. We found that when we did Lear, you know, I had a lot of people come up, especially women come up and talk to me about how they had not liked the play, but now they understood it in a way they never could before. And so I think that's what it does. It throws a different light on these great classics, and it's good. It's good. It's almost like, you know, we go through this thing of, oh, they can't play that because they're a different nationality. They can't play that. But really, anybody could play most anything.
Exactly. I do recommend that people get out to the Theatricum Bhutanicum, go there early, enjoy the whole space and the beautiful setting. It's unlike anything else. I want to thank you so much, as always, Ellen. I'll be out there to see the rest of the season.
Oh,
and
good.
Thanks so much for taking the time. I know you're busy.
To speak with you, Dom.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.